Welcome back to the second hour of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And my name is Bill Cundiff.
What do you have for us, Bill?
Well, we have a sponsor this hour is Pape Machinery. And they're our local John Deere Ag and Turf dealer, and they'll do anything John Deere.
They'll stop at anything. I was all excited.
Well, no, John Deere, and they will work on other brands of tractors. They got a fully staffed service department up there. They got a great inventory of machines right now. The shortages are slowly coming to an end in tractor land, but they do have a good inventory right now. Go up and see them. They're located at 3119 Twin View Boulevard in Shasta Lake, and you can give them a call, 226-9226, or catch them on the web at papemachinery.com.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what. If you live in the Reading area, I was going to do, I didn't plan my free advertisement of the week, but I got to say Nicolette Glass does a great job. You call them, they answer the phone. That right there is
a real person?
Yeah, a human. Human answers the phone, which is fantastic. And if you need stuff, they come out and do it. I had them put some of those screens that block the sun because our windows are getting blown out from the heat, the seal. So they're replacing some of the windows. Some of those were off by, can you imagine, a 16th of an inch mattered. They had to rebuild them. They had to remake them because it turned out when they had been replaced before, they were measured incorrectly, not by them. And so they were like, no problem, we'll get them to you. Holy cow, that was 10 days ago. They got them remade. They're coming out this week. Their phone number is 530-222-3515. They do screens. Oh, they fixed the sliding glass door, too. The sliding part, I thought it was probably the, you know, the wheels, the little wheels on the bottom of sliding doors always screw up. And the nice young man who came out said, nope, it's not the wheels. He goes, it's the track. There's like a little thing in the track, fixed it. I don't know what it cost me, $15 or something. So they do all sorts of stuff like that. And so if you're having window issues and you think, oh, this is going to cost me an arm and a leg, and you live anywhere in the Reading vicinity, you should call Nicolette Glass, 530-222-3515. Their nice folks will come right out, take a look at it, and fix it for you. So there you have it. All right, swerving back to Iran. And I think most people kind of overlook it. We talk a lot about China in the world. We you know, hear a lot about Russia. We never know what's real, what's fake. But a long time ago, I just was so struck at an event that I attended where I met Fred and his friend Ross, and they were telling me all about the reality of their country and how modern it used to be. And I guess, I don't know, most of us don't go to the Wayback Machine and look at pictures of the past, but boy, if you look back into the 70s, you know, the idea of women wearing bikinis in Iran, you're like, oh, I'm sure that never happened. No, it happened. They were super, super modern, and the Islamic fundamentalist guys took over and just, I was going to say turned the place upside down, but not really. They just shrunk it. They took all the freedom away, made it all one size fits all, and you speak out, you pay heavily for that. And it's starting to fall apart for them, I think, in a big way. But Fred, I remember you telling us a long time ago that during that first Iran deal with President Obama, that if they gave them all that money, that they did, but they were planning on it. And he said, please, whatever you do, don't give them all that money and make that deal, because when you do, they're going to kill all of our political prisoners. Nothing's really changed since then, has it? I mean, that's still the thing.
Hi,
Fred.
That's Monty. Hi, good afternoon. Thank you, Aaron, and thank you, Bill. I appreciate it. You know, you let us talk and about the human rights and about freedom in Iran. I really appreciate it. And also, thank you also for mentioning about my friend Ross a couple of times earlier today. And I thank you so much. But as you know, I'm a human rights activist. And what we're trying to do in general, which Hamid talked about it, we're trying to be voice for the young Iranian and the women. And absolutely, you're right. The Iranian government, since last 40 years, they destroy everything in Iran. They're trying to destroy the culture, environmental, economy. And not only in Iran, they expand this destruction almost in its full area. You will see in the foreign policy what they have done in the Middle East. You will see what they have done in practically in Syria, in Lebanon, in Iraq. In all that area, practically they have bad influence or the proxy of the Iranian government in that area. Therefore, as you mentioned about during the Obama administration, when they did the first negotiation, practically they provide a lot of cash, practically, and they, I know you heard about it, they are sending by the airplane to the Iranian government. And we mentioned that is not going to help Iranian people. That money actually will provide more power to Iranian Islamic Guard and practically Iranian Revolutionary Guard and also to the Basiji. And based on that time, that was our input. And now when we're looking back, you will see that money, they didn't expend any money for the Iranian people. That money went all the way to practically damage to that area and make their own proxy military and the Iranian Revolutionary Guard make it stronger. And they spend more money and practically keep it hiding, but they keep expanding the nuclear activity. And they went, and also now you can see that money practically not expending a lot of research, a lot of money on the drone. And you will see the impact of the drone right now, how much expansion that Iran has been done. And practically that's because of in that time, we're trying to appease mullahs. And based on that appeasement, practically we provide those money. Unfortunately, as earlier Hamid talked about it, since this administration, new administration, we have come and what happened, Iranian government, they're able to sell oil as before. And again, it's providing a lot of money to them. That was part of practically, you won't see that much on the news, but Iran is able to sell a lot of oil to China, to Malaysia, and to the black market and gain the money again. Therefore, this is what we are talking, that if the current administration, they just not to appease mullahs and practically to stay with the Iranian people, that will actually help the Iranian resistance. Thank you.
Well, you got some firsthand experience. We've never really asked you about this, but I know in your bio it says you were arrested once in 1980, and after that you were forced to leave the country.
Yes, I'm from Mashhad, and then in that time I was against Khomeini. That time Khomeini was the supreme leader, and practically they arrested me. And then practically in that time, it was really, really hard to see the torturing and how they, practically the prisoner, how bad was the situation in Mashhad. But to make it short, I was lucky to escape from Iran. And then I went to Turkey in 1986. I went to Turkey. And then after that, I was very lucky to come to the United States. But since I've been coming to the United States, I realized what freedom means, what democracy means. I mean, it takes me 1 year to realize that I can say something against the United States president if I don't like some policy and I'm not going to be in prison. I couldn't believe that, that I have that freedom in the USA. And over time, as I learned the culture, and I really, really, enjoy how freely we can talk about what we don't like or what we like. And this is, to me, is really, really, really good value for human rights. We, as a human, we need to be free. We need to be able to trust each other. We need to be able to talk to each other. And I really enjoy the life I have here. I'm married here. My wife, Kim, she's RN, and I have two kids. My son is graduating from Sac State Communication, and my daughter also, she's RN, and she's working in the hospital. And I'm really appreciated this opportunity the USA provided to me. I mean, I never thought from Iran prison and my future is going to end up in the United States and have a good life, and also be able to be as a human rights activist and fight against this bad government in Iran. And practically, and again, thank you so much to you today to give me a chance to be on your program.
Well, we're happy to bring this to people because it's pretty difficult unless you know someone. If I hadn't met you, this would be a difficult topic to cover because I don't think it's covered all that well in our country, and I don't even know who I would have called. So I think you provide valuable insight for folks. Tell me this too. You have the Organization of Iranian American Communities in Northern California seems to be pretty active and quite large. Is that unique around the country, or are you just part of a much? I know you're part of a much larger organization.
Yes, we in the United States, we have an organization called OIAC, Organization of Iranian American Community. That organization practically is all over the United States, more than 40 states we have organizations. That all of us practically, we are looking for the government change in Iran, regime change in Iran, and all of these organizations, we are connected together, and we are politically, we are active. In California, we have two organizations, one in Northern California and one in Southern California. We are very active, and we all, as I mentioned, we are pro regime change. But we, as Hamid, my friend, mentioned earlier, we don't want any foreigner money. We don't want any military, foreign military to impact Iran. We think the best solution, especially now, we can see the regime changed by Iranian people. Basically, we need to fight ourselves to get to the democracy and freedom. And one thing, as the previously you're talking about, that when you make the revolution, there is a chance of risk. Absolutely, you're right. We have seen all the revolution, most of the revolution, it didn't go to the right way. And practically, this is one thing we need to be very careful when we make the revolution. Practically, there is a lot of risk, and we have to be very careful to minimize those risks, practically, to get to the better result. But go back to your question, the Iranian American community is very, very active, and is practically covered in more than 40 states. Here also, I would like to mention that we try to talk to the Congress members and their staff, and practically, I would like to hear. To really appreciate Congressman Doug LaMonfa. He is continuously supporting the human rights in Iran. And, you know, when we have the resolution, for example, Resolution 118 or Resolution 374, which they speak about regime change by Iranian people supporting the uprising, practically, Congressman Doug LaMonfa, he is really always supporting the freedom for Iran. I would like to appreciate that also.
Why is it, do you think, the world community is so slow to react to what's happening in Iran? We see bits and pieces on mainstream media about it, but it's not getting a lot of press. Why do you think that is?
If you remember last time when me and Hamid, we were in your show, we mentioned about that. The resistance units in Iran are expanding, they're growing, and then practically there is a resistance unit which in last July we had our annual meeting, and in that annual meeting more than 5,000 members of this resistance units in Iran they attend that meeting. This meeting was virtual meeting through Zoom. And then there was more than 30,000 Iranians also from all over different countries they attend that. Therefore, that was a good news. Now, the good news is the regime change. Today I have a good news for you that the regime change in Iran is coming. And practically there is no way to go around it not to happen. It's going to happen. Therefore, in this case, what I would like to say is the line of appeasement, unfortunately, in media is strong too. And then practically in media, you will see that they are not, they don't, the focus that suppose if, you know, what happened to negotiation? What kind of news shall we put that not to impact negotiation? Therefore, when some media, that is the line that practically, that approach they go, therefore, it will be very hard. But the good news is right now, I think some reason is we have a lot of huge demonstration by all Iranians for all different ideas that, for example, happened in Canada, happened in Los Angeles, in Washington. And we got some good, we got very good coverage by media regarding to the
That's
Iranian
good.
People.
That
other people, they are also the active, yes.
Well, good. They should be covering it. It's about time. It seems like it's one of those things that would it should fit into their narrative. It's being. I mean, this revolution. I've always been, I guess, kind of surprised by it that it's being led by a woman in the Middle East. I mean, that alone ought to be noteworthy. You'd think that would put you guys on the front page of everything all the time, but. It seems to elude most people. I bet you if you went to most Americans and you said, hey, I'll give you $20 if you can tell me who's leading the revolution in Iran, and just gave them the choices, which are now popular now, you know, a man or a woman, right? Just the two big ones. And I'll bet you money they'd get it wrong, which is kind of sad. But Miriam Rajavi is a really – she's a very nice – you can tell she's a very nice woman. She isn't an angry, you know, bitter screamer. Her speeches are wonderful. I hope people go online and take a look at that. We've linked your website on there. The IAC NorCal is on there, and there's quite a bit of coverage. If you're on Twitter, go look on that. It's all over the place, and she's quite the force. She seems amazing. I'd like to see her one day in real life. We have to take a really quick break. We'll be right back. Our guest is Fred Dasmalchi. We are talking about Iran and the revolution.
Once I rose above the noise and confusion, just to get a glimpse beyond.
That is what it's going to take, too. Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, that's how it gets fixed. We were, Fred, we were chatting on the break. The people leading the revolution were mistakenly labeled as a terrorist group. That was, I can't remember if it's the last time we spoke with you or once before, but we can't think of the name of that group. What did you think it was, Bill?
I can't remember. Go ahead.
Is it about MEK?
Yes, MEK. That's it. What does that mean? What does it stand for again?
That is the People Organization of Mujahideen South. That is the main Iranian organization. Therefore, a long time ago, when during the Iranian government had the president that time, of course, it was elected president. We never had the election in Iran. Therefore, he came and gave a message to the West that I would love to negotiate with USA and practically practically, you know, I would like to have a dialogue with the whole nation. And then in that time, President Clinton, he was in charge. And then practically based on the meeting, the Iranian government in that time asked the U.S. government, if you want to start the negotiation and all this, can you do a favor for us? Can you put my main opposition, can you put as a terrorist group?
That's right.
Clinton administration in that time to appease the mullahs. There is a documentation. I have a documentation that LA Times provided in that time that some of the senior member of the State Department, they mentioned that the base to appeasing the mullahs, practically this word, we are going to put Iran in opposition as a terrorist group. Therefore, in that time, they did that. And what happened through the process, the Iranian opposition, they practically sued the State Department and said that, what is your justification for putting us on the terrorist group? And that time, there was a big battle against the Iranian opposition and the State Department, and it took some years. And finally, the court come up with a statement that based on the information that the State Department has provided, that this group has not done anything against West, and there's no any documentation that these people have done anything wrong. And they asked the State Department in 6 months to provide if they have additional information. If they don't have additional information, therefore, practically, we are going to remove them, the court. And exactly, I remember, it was after 6 months, it was a Friday. And in that Friday, actually, Hillary Clinton, she was the State Department, charge of the State Department. Exactly at the last day, which was Friday, she practically removed the Iranian, practically, opposition, MEK, out of the list. If I want to connect that to today, we have the person who is in charge of the State Department regarding to Iran is Mr. Robert Mollick. He has got very good connection to the Iranian lobbyists. And as a matter of fact, the Iranian people are really, really upset, and they don't like this guy. No Iranian that support the regime change in Iran like this guy who is in charge of the State Department of Iran. And he had a meeting about, I think, 5 weeks ago. Suppose that meeting is going to be by Iranian, meeting some Iranian opposition, but it wasn't. It was member of the lobbyists from the Iranian government. And I can send you that documentation if you want to. Therefore, that against all the Iranians inside Iran and outside of Iran, they said, this is really bad policy. It's going back to the policy of the appeasement. And then practically, when we are talking to, practically my friend Hamid is mentioning about, we are talking about line of appeasement and all this, what we are worrying right now, to be honest to you, the people of Iran, if you let me, I can explain in 3-4 minutes why really the revolution is going to happen. But what we are worrying about that through the process, we are going, if you're going to see the same policy from the State Department again. I mean, that's what we are talking. If they don't want to help us, that is their decision as the department, this administration. If they don't want to really sanction the Iranian government, I wish they'd do it. But the problem is with the State Department, we are worrying about that through the process. They practically keep some kind of good line for helping the Iranian government. And that's why we're asking to practically to be neutral. If you're at least if you're not helping the Iranian resistance, if you're not helping us to change the Iranian government, at least the State Department stay out of it, not to hurt us. I mean, look at the last administration we had. They did a really good policy against sanctioning Iranian government. They put the maximum pressure to sanction Iranian government. We really appreciate that. But this administration, unfortunately, is not doing it and is doing opposite. That's one of the worries that we are worrying about that. And you practically saw your question was talking about the Obama administration and the money they gave, but as you can see how they have been connected all the way to today. Practically what we see is 40 years of State Department, some part of State Department who are in charge, that they just want to appease these mullahs, or sometimes they call them these mullahs are moderate. They look at the some part of Iranian government. But this group is better than that group. This group, let's focus on supporting this group. The Khamenei is bad, but there is other group in Iranian government that they are better. What we're trying to say, these are not true. These mullah people, they're all of them bad. There is no any group of them that we can use to say, you know, and that's what you would like to stop, practically.
Right.
So there's not the good mullahs and the bad mullahs. They're just the mullahs, all bad.
They're all bad. Practically, from that call, from these people, nothing good has come for Iranians, or for their best, or for anybody. The only thing they have seen, as mentioned, just destroying.
It's interesting.
I can prove it to you why the government of Iran is going to change. And this is nobody can stop it practically. I had a two good conversation last two, three days with Iran. I can share with you if it's okay.
Yes, please.
Sure.
One of them, it was one of my friends. He just came back from Iran. He was in Mashhad and Tehran in two, three months. He mentioned to me that I asked him, he's my friend, he used to be my roommate. He's not politically active, but he has to go to Iran and he came back. I cannot go back to Iran. I have not been in Iran for the last 35 years. But my friend, he went because he has to go to some family. She was in Iran. And he said, for example, there was a breakfast package. He said, Viben, and we bought for 7,000 2 months, he said. He said, I went to get the same item from the shop. After 2 days, it was 9,000 2 months. Same item in 2 weeks was 14,000 2 months. This is like a milk, practically. It's like a buttermilk. Therefore, as you can see, how much the price, this is in Iran, is increasing. And then I asked him, what about your safety? He said, even though he was not, because he said, I'm an old man, I couldn't go to the demonstration, but he said, twice he was almost attacked by those moral police or by different kind of police. And he said that's become very normal for the people. The police, they come, and whoever on the street, sometimes they attack them. And then the next question I asked from this friend who just came from Iran, I told him, what about the dollar? How much the currency of dollar costs right now? We know 3 months ago, each dollar was about 30,000 2 months. And we know right now in market, it has changed from each dollar, $1 from 30,000 2 months to 36,000. But he said when he was trying to get some dollar, he said it was 40,000 each dollar. It shows shows how bad is the economy in Iran, and it's getting worse and worse.
Oh, boy.
And
yeah.
Practically everything in Iran is based on the dollar, the value of the dollar. It means that when it goes from 3 months, $1 from 30,000 2 months to 40,000 2 months, that means that everything increased by 33% in 3 months. That's kind of relationship. Therefore, the way I can look at it, this kind of economy has been going on for a long time. And then that's why there's no way to Iranian government is not able to fix this problem. The other conversation I had, which is regarding to practically, as the people are standing in Iran, against in so many cities, for example, as we know, about 277 cities standing. But it's not only the people are uprising. You saw that in universities, more than 140 universities are on strike against the government. You have a teacher union. You have, right now, last 4 days, you have a truck drivers also, which is in 6 states they started and going to expand it. They are on strike. Practically, it's all over Iran and Baluchistan and everywhere. But what was interesting for me, this news my friend is telling from Iran based on the conversation yesterday, actually, that in Tehran, very soon, all the shops are going to be closed. And where I'm from, Mashhad, very soon, next month, there is a plan, all the shops in the city of Mashhad and other cities are going to be closed. That practically, it means that this revolution is happening and is expanding and practically is getting more spread and is getting to the different area. And Iranian government is not capable of solving any problem. And as we go forward, practically, the life is getting harder. And the Iranian government, it goes to the Iranian government option. This is the people situation. Go back to the Iranian government option. Iranian government Right now, they have about 50,000 forces in Tehran only. In which out of that 50,000 forces they have in Tehran, 40,000 of them from Basiji and from IRGC, which is Iranian Revolutionary Guard. Right now, Iranian government maintains 50,000 military all the time in Tehran. Another, that 10,000 is different kind of the, like a moral police and all this different kind. This is 50,000 people. And Iranian government, they cannot give anything to the back to the Iranian people, because what happened, we saw the uprising in 2019, November 2019. When there was an uprising in that time, in period of 4 days or 5 days, they killed 1,500 of unarmed protesters. Therefore, the Iranian people, they will see that all this uprising they have done before, they never gained anything. And always there was more pressure on Iranian people, more execution. That's why we see in one side the Iranian people, they will see no hope from the government. And the other side, from Iranian government, we see the only option they have is to press more, execute more, and that's the option. That's why when you look at it by expanding to the truck drivers, the shops and markets in so many cities, therefore we get more radical and more radical. And that's what I'm trying to say. There is a good news that that will be regime change in Iran by the Iranian people.
That's awesome. It's nice when you see people not go run and hide. You know, it's at some point stand and fight is the option, and run and hide has not worked over and over and over again. We have to take another quick break. When we come back, though, I would be interested to know if the people in your organization here in the U.S. are seeing any support from the youth in this country for the youth in Iran. Are they even aware? I think I know the answer, but I figured I'd ask the expert.
Yeah.
We'll be back with our guest, Fred Dasmalchi. I found a great song for the mullahs. Actually, they're... So Messina, they did a terrific song about the mullahs a long time ago. We used to listen to it. We didn't know what it was about back then, but now we do. So you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
Singing whiskey for my men, beer for my horses.
I don't know if they drink whiskey in Iran, and I don't know if they have horses who like beer, but I think that would be a great ending.
I'm going to say no and no.
Ah, darn it. I thought that was the perfect song. Probably not. All right, Fred, I've got two questions for you. I'm curious about the youth. I'm curious if there's a counterpart in the U.S. that feels for their compadres overseas. And it was interesting because our engineer is a younger person. And he was saying that he was unaware there was a revolution until like 4 days ago. And I thought...
Yeah.
Obviously, they're keeping that pretty well hidden.
Yes. You know, some of that, they will go, maybe we are not doing a good job. Maybe we need to be more active, you know. One thing.
Blame yourself. Good answer.
Yeah.
Just fall on the sword there. It's Fred's fault. No, I mean, I think that they're not telling people. Liam, how did you even hear about it?
I want to say I heard about it through TikTok. But, yeah, I mean,
The Chinese screwed up and let it slip through?
They let it slip through. No, I mean, there hasn't been a whole lot of media attention, unfortunately.
And And were you aware that the bulk of the country is under 30?
I didn't know that either. That caught me by surprise. I mean, it makes sense. I don't know a whole lot about Iran's history, but I mean, as I've...
May I ask you, they were watching TikTok, what was the topic? What was the conversation about? I mean, what kind of information was providing? Because in TikTok, we have two groups. The one group, they are practically the some American very much left that they're thinking, you know, oh, you know, USA is trying to practically do something in Iran and trying to change the direction that way by telling, no, this is propaganda by USA, there's no revolution in Iran and all this. That's very strong. And then there is a other group that they're trying to say, no, that's not true. This is not the US propaganda, and it's practically happening in Iran. That's why I asked you that question.
Yeah, you have to be able to separate truth from fiction on TikTok. I think it's
what was the context though?
So, I mean, fortunate. I mean, I don't think a lot of people understand like how powerful the tool TikTok is. It was just someone's like filming from their window as there were like riots in the streets and there was gunfire and like people screaming. I mean, it was like scary, but it was just firsthand video. We don't see really major media publications in the States, at least, talking about it, but, yeah, I don't know.
Unfortunately, you're right. After success, that's a good thing you watch. And the thing about it is, unfortunately, because of still we are negotiating with Iranian government or government, still they have not closed the negotiation with Iranian government, and that's why practically they don't want to show those kind of practical video for the news, the very understanding, and at least for the left. Therefore, they think it's sabotaging the negotiation. And then, practically, but we are hoping as we go in Iran, get more radical, and regime changes become more obvious, therefore, make it more on the news. But as you mentioned, one thing right now is social media is very, very, very important. I mean, we are talking about Twitter, we are talking about TikTok, we are talking about Telegram. These are all the tools that are very strong, and as it becomes more active, it practically can pass the news to the younger generation.
That's kind of a little bit of a saving grace, and I guess that leads into my next question. I was curious, like in China, they have a terrible time, obviously, with the revolution, just because they're so repressive, but they control so much, and there's such great surveillance.
Heavily censored.
And I understand in Iran there's a lot of censorship, but do they have the surveillance capability like they do in China, where they know what everyone's, you know, doing all the time? Do they have the cameras and all that?
Yes. One of the things, that's a good question, is that those cameras, they imported from China.
Of course they did.
Therefore, when there is a demonstration, for example, we're talking about Tehran, there is a 50,000 Iranian Islamic Guard that spread all over Iran. But the opposition, they decided not to have uprising in one location, they divided to the 64 area. And when you have the protest in 64 different areas in Tehran, for example, same thing happening in Mashhad, Isfahan, and other cities too. Therefore, it's very hard for Iranian government to have its forces in 64 locations, because they don't know which one over they're going to show up. And practically, the Iranian resistance, they decided to split government forces, government Islamic Guard, to all these different areas, and therefore they can do the better job. But before the demonstration, practically, once they decide what area they want to go, they will go and practically, there are a lot of pictures, they will show that they will go and dismantle those cables. There is a wire, there is a post, there is a wire. They will go and those cameras, because those cameras are practically based on the database Iran government has got. They can identify the faces and come up with a name.
Oh.
And that's destroy them practically. That's before the area decided to be demonstration, they will try to destroy all those cameras.
That totally makes sense. I mean, they're gonna ID you from those cameras when you go out and protest.
But
so the first thing you do is disable those.
Yes. But isn't it interesting when you think about protests? Like, okay, Liam, you can be our third-party neutral observer here. When you think about protests and you think about surveillance, automatically you think about China. Do you think about that in Iran?
No.
Yeah, I wouldn't have either.
I wouldn't. I wouldn't have thought that.
Yeah. In Iran, it's very much advanced right now. It's practically right now, the 300 members, 3 days ago, Iranian government, they announced that 300 members of their own Islamic Guard has been killed by people.
Oh.
Therefore, we are talking about the high official of Iranian government.
No kidding.
That has been, at least 300, that has been killed by the people of Iran. And what happened is, for example, there was a case that in Sistan and Balochistan there was an uprising, and they realized there is an officer was very harsh on the people and killing the people. Therefore, they follow him up to see where he's living. And he was living in the north of Iran, in Mazandaran. If that's too far from north to go all the way to Balochistan, they're talking about for Iran distance, maybe it's about 1,000, maybe about 800 miles away he was living. Basically, they follow up him and they kill them. The people, they killed him in Mazandaran. Therefore, if you look at it on social media, there are Iranian people almost every day. Those people who they kill, who are in charge of the cities killing the young people, some people, they will go follow up them and practically take a rid of them.
Hmm. Now, do they have, naturally in a lot of these revolutions, as they get going, you get a lot of defections from the military. Is that happening in Iran?
That's a very good question. There was the monarchy, some part of monarchy who are living in the USA before. They were telling that practically they have the connection to the part of the military, and they promise if there is uprising they will come and support the people. We keep telling them it's impossible. The way set up Iranian government, the military and all these people, they are not coming and supporting the people. What happened? In last 2-3 months, we observed that they are not connecting to the people. But what we have seen that some portion of them, they retire from their job, or just practically they leave their job and practically they just go away and they're not connecting. They are not practically coming and killing the young Iranians. And actually, there is a number. What percentage of the military has been practically not to fight for the people, but they retire or they go away and they don't want to fight. There is some percentage.
They decided that their life expectancy was actually starting to become an issue.
Yes. Actually, 1% of the people who have been arrested, about 30,000 people have been arrested in Iran. Based on the data we have from Iran, 1% of the people who have been arrested, they are part of the Islamic Guard or Basiji or army.
Oops.
Which only 1% of the people who got arrested has been joining the people. But at least I can tell you about 25% of the young people who has been arrested, somehow their parents are from, like their father is a Basiji, and they're related to the Basiji family. And even though this Basiji or military, they support the Iranian government, but their kids, their family, they're young and they don't support it. Actually, about 26 to 30% of them who have been arrested, their family of those Basiji also.
Interesting. So, when you start having the people in charge defect, that's another, put that on the list of ways you know that they're going to lose.
But we are changing the Aaron as we go. More Basiji and more Islamic Guard, they will resign or practically, because they will see that, for example, their brother or their family are against the government and everybody is blaming them and they cannot stay for a long time. They are going to practically not stand. They are not practically, they will have a hard time to stay on the job.
Huh.
And that's what they're hoping.
Yeah.
And that's why I think it's going to happen when we get more radical and more radical. As I mentioned, when the markets are going to strike, which they're going to plan to do, and the truck drivers already started, and when it gets fast, and these people practically are not going to save the government, they are going to back up. I don't think they will come and support the people with arm and all this, like, you know, like part of the military or Islamic God, they come and join the people. I don't think that's going to happen. I hope it happens, but I don't think it'll happen because we have a reason, because of the structure of the Iranian government. It's not like the regular military. It's a different system they have. And that's why it's not functioning that way and it's not going to happen. But if it happens, good. Therefore, the regime change will happen faster.
That's terrific. Well, you can't... I don't know. You can't go wrong if you start seeing the people who are keeping those guys in power second guess their decision to keep doing that.
Yeah.
I would like to mention one more thing.
Yes, please.
That, for example, Khamenei, in last 2-3 speech, if you listen to his speech, he's asking the people who support him for all these years, I'm talking about other mullahs who they have been getting benefits from the system and they have been milking the people and they have a really good life. He's asking them, okay, come on the radio or the TV show and support me. None of them has come. They are all quiet. They don't talk against Khamenei, but they are not supporting him also in media. As you listen to the leaders of the, for example, of the Islamic God or the Raisi, suppose the president of Iran, they always are complaining. Today is the day you've been talking about the other part of Iran, mullahs. That today is the day that you have to come and support us. Why you guys are quiet? Why you're not coming to support us? Other mullahs are all quiet. They're all scared because they know that regime change is coming, and they are not practically not supporting the people, but also they are not supporting Khamenei.
Oh, that's good enough, I guess. And for people out there that are thinking, well, I don't even know anybody who's from Iran or going there. I don't know anything about it. I'll tell you what, you could do a lot of good just by making people aware of this. I think that, you know, forwarding the things that are on social media. I signed up for the emails from Organization of Iranian Communities a long time ago, and they're really interesting, and it'll keep you up to speed without bombarding you. You guys don't send out, you know, a crazy amount of stuff. I really appreciate the fact that when you come on, we all walk away and we've actually learned something.
Learned a lot.
That you don't hear anyplace else. And I'm sad that we don't hear it anyplace else. Yeah. But I hope that the awareness in the San Francisco protest and the one in D.C. are going really well today. I hope that that does bring some awareness. And I hope people go ask a friend. Hey, do you know what's going on in Iran?
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for giving chat today. Just, I would like to say, if you want to get updated news in Iran, there is an NCRI. If you put in Twitter, NCRI, National Council of Resistance of Iran, it is in English. And they, what I'm talking about, the conversation about the details in Iran, they are providing every day.
Okay, well, cool. And we'll have the show posted for you at
wethepeopleradio.us.
Money don't grow on trees. We got bills to pay. We got mouths to feed. There ain't nothing in this world for free. I know we can't slow down. We can't hold back. Though you know we wish we could. I know there ain't no rest for the wicked until we close our eyes for good.